Our next case this morning is number 06-2417, Thomas McCoy against the Maytag Corporation. Mr. Stone.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. At the outset, let me say that it's indeed an honor and a privilege to appear before you because this is my first time in the Seventh Circuit. This case comes to you from Southern Illinois. It comes to you based on a summary judgment in favor of Maytag Corporation against my client. And we're here, of course, complaining that that was the wrong order. I think in order to best illustrate why the plaintiff believes that the district court committed an error is to articulate how it is that the district court could have been right. And that is to say, given the setup at Maytag Corporation here in Illinois, if my client had been injured at home and he had sought the benefits of sickness and accident benefits, and he was off work for 6 months, and he failed to reveal to his boss or his employer what his status was, Maytag would have every right to fire him. But in this case, he was not hurt at home. He was hurt in Maytag, in the plant. And there are two sets of rules that apply to employees. One set of rules applies if you're injured in the plant, and one set of rules applies if you're injured outside the plant. And what Maytag did was apply the rules that would allow him to be terminated as if he was injured outside the plant, and of course he wasn't. And so the question then is what's the connection then? How does a person who's injured in the plant get a set of rules applied to him that shouldn't apply to him?
Well, isn't it true that employees receiving workers' comp still had to comply with Maytag's 30-day policy?
Absolutely not. That is not true. That is not a fact in this case that is without dispute. And, of course, we're here on summary judgment. But consider the whole backdrop of comp and why the two rules are separate. If a person is injured at home, Judge, and he applies for sickness and accident benefits, his medical status is a mystery to Heron Comp or Heron Maytag. And so he has to provide updated medical to the company so the company knows what his status is. Because after all, he's injured somewhere else other than the plant. If he's injured in the plant, according to the collective bargaining agreement, Article 13 applies to him. He has an excused absence. And under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act, Maytag can take a peek into his medical records anytime they want to. Because HIPAA doesn't apply, you don't need a medical authorization in this regard. In comp, the way the whole system is set up, medical is not a secret. And indeed, in this setting, Maytag Corporation had an attorney who knew his status. They had an adjuster who knew his status on the outside, Gallagher Bassett. They had this woman on the inside, Marie Brasher, who knew what his status was.
And so he had a lawyer who knew his status.
He did have a lawyer who knew his status.
And that's the sort of perplexing thing, because almost concurrently with the whatever you want to call, however he got under the accident benefit, he files a workers' comp claim.
Yes.
And so that's proceeding. I don't know how. We don't know. It's not discussed, except the fact that his workers' comp lawyer told him not to respond to some of these letters.
Well, it's at two separate times, Your Honor. Let me address the first concern and then the second concern, which has to do with not responding.
Okay.
The first part is this. If Maytag had played this straight, if they had just honored his comp claim like they should have, none of this would have happened. He would never have been on SNA. But what Maytag was doing in the spring of 2003 is they were denying all kinds of comp claims. And well, consider in this case, they denied it without an investigation.
Well, didn't he apply for the accident and sickness benefits the same day he applied for workers' comp?
Well, remember in the record, Your Honor, what Tom McCoy says is that when he goes back to his supervisor and says, I have restrictions from my doctor, Gordon Daly, the supervisor, says, no, I can't handle those restrictions. Go to the medical office and apply for workers' compensation. Tom McCoy testified that he was led to believe he was applying for workers' compensation when he filled out that SNA benefit. And indeed, Kathy LeMay, the person who helped him fill that document out, testified that Marie Brasher was telling her, put comp people on SNA, because Heron had high costs of comp and they were trying to misdirect their comp exposure to an insured exposure.
So you're saying that he didn't apply for accident and sickness benefits at the same day and at the same time he applied for workers' compensation. He just, are you saying that he filled out just the accident and sickness form, or was it more than one form, or did made it so that he applied to both?
No, what happened was, is he goes to Kathy LeMay at the medical office to apply for comp. Kathy LeMay had been ordered by Marie Brasher, her superior, not her superior, but the person in charge of comp, put people like Tom McCoy on SNA. And so Tom McCoy fills out the very document that he's provided. He thinks he's applying for comp. When he realizes he's not getting comp, that it's actually SNA, which is less of a benefit, and he has to pay deductibles and co-pays for group health insurance, he goes and hires a lawyer. And at that point, Maytag Corporation fills out two additional forms in-house called Claim Form 45s and supplies then a formal comp claim to Gallagher Bassett. And it's when that happens, Gallagher Bassett gets involved, which is this outside administrator, and Gallagher Bassett wants to know from Heron Maytag, is this a comp claim? And Marie Brasher lies to Gallagher Bassett and says he never claimed he was injured in the plant. So he's supposed to be on SNA. Because if Marie Brasher hadn't lied to Gallagher Bassett, he'd have been on comp, he never would have been subject to this 30-day rule, and he would still have been working. I mean, what the district court misses is that if this guy's hurt at home and he goes and he tries to get sickness and accident benefits, absolutely he's fired properly because he didn't give them 30-day notice. But when you're injured in the plant, according to the contract, you don't have to provide 30-day notice. The reason you don't have to provide 30 days notice is because there's a whole comp setting or system that allows Maytag to know what his status. And indeed, it doesn't matter what the 30-day rule is because in this case, he provided his medical status.
Well, now, this lawyer he hired, didn't he fire the workman's comp claim the same day?
The same day
as he completed the statement of claim for accident and sickness, you're saying that was on different days?
No, I don't know if it's the same day. It may have been the same day. Mm-hmm. I know that when he filled out the SNA benefit, he was led to believe by the people in the plant that he was filling out comp.
But at any rate, he did file a workman's comp claim. And let me ask you, said that it was absolutely not true that you had to comply with the 30-day policy if you were on workers' comp. Is there anything in the record that supports your position?
Sure.
What do the regs at Maytag say?
Article 23, the very last sentence of Article 23 says, Article 23, which is the 30-day rule, does not apply to in-plant injuries. I mean, it's and in fact, that's one of the things that I found incredible in this case, because once that was revealed to the light of day that Article 23 didn't apply to people who were injured in the plant, I filed a request to admit facts to say Tom McCoy was injured in the plant. And Maytag says we have insufficient information to admit or deny that. Well, which is funny because they made him undergo a post-accident drug screen the very day he was hurt. So if Maytag on the one hand says they don't know that he was injured in the plant, but on the day he was injured they make him take a drug screen that is only given when you're injured in the plant, when the supervisor was deposed, Gordon Daly, his boss, says, I remember Tom being hurt in the plant. I remember it well, and I had no doubt about the veracity of his claim. Because what happened in this case, and the reason it's retaliatory, is that what Maytag had a problem with high costs of comp, and corporations apparently have that problem, but the remedy is with the legislature. You don't take it out of the backside of employees with legitimate cases. Because what they did in this case, and what they did with several other people, as it turns out, is that when someone was injured in the plant because they couldn't afford comp, they would put them on this insured benefit track. And then if that benefit track lasts longer than 6 months, he's caught in a trap which is, you know, he didn't provide a 30-day notice. He wasn't supposed to have to provide that in the first place.
When there's this dual coverage, which there apparently was,
yes,
or at least alleged, what happens when the workers' comp then comes to fruition? Is there reimbursement involved? Is there?
I'm glad you asked that, Judge.
Well,
because,
maybe not.
Well, no, I am glad. Because what was going on in this situation is when I asked Pat Caron, who's this Gallagher-Bassett woman who administers comp, I said, well, did you reimburse? You know, when you finally honored this claim and you started to pay comp, did you pay back SNA? And they said, no, we don't pay it back if it's a disputed claim. So that's what's going on here.
Well, did he get a double payment then?
No, no, no. What he did is he got TTD with an offset of SNA. And by that time, I'm his lawyer, Your Honor. And in fact, I was too stupid to ask the question at the time because I didn't figure it all out until later. But I got him TTD, which is 66% of his wages, less the 50% set-off.
Set-off from the other policy?
See, Maytag claimed the set-off, but in turn, Maytag didn't pay back the insurance company. That's the scheme. That's what they were doing to avoid the exposure of comp, because they didn't have insurance for comp.
Well, the insurance company is the one with a gripe there, then, isn't it?
The insurance company definitely has a gripe there, but they're not part of this. But I discovered all of this in the midst of this retaliatory claim that they didn't pay him back. And that's when you figure out this is what the whole scheme is. My client's caught in the trap because of the high cost of comp, the pressure to deny claims, the redirection of people to this other benefit.
And why, so that's why did the lawyer say don't respond to this stuff about, you know, because letters kept coming.
He didn't specifically respond. He didn't specifically refuse to respond to the letters. Keep in mind, the letters came to his house 6 days after the deadline to respond.
But they still had the caveat in it, if you've got documents, if you've got that, let us know. And for whatever reason, he didn't.
What he did is went to his lawyer. And the record shows he went to his lawyer the same day, a guy named Mark Prince. Mark Prince called Maytag's lawyer. So it's not like he didn't do anything. He did what every client you would want your client to do, which is go to you to determine what the dispute is and find out what the answer is. So he goes to his lawyer. His lawyer contacts Maytag's lawyer. Maytag's lawyer doesn't do anything. And when nothing happens, he fires that lawyer hires me.
But that lawyer did not submit the medical information that had been requested in that letter, which said, if you have anything, please provide it.
Judge, keep in mind, they already had the status. They had the
did
last.
They have something in writing?
Yes, they had
from
two.
The doctor?
Yes.
That was current, that fit within that 30-day? I understand what they had before. I'm talking about the more current information.
They did not have a slip dated within 30 days.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Mr. Stone, you had a lot of questions at the end and had run out of time. I will give you 3 minutes for rebuttal if you want to use it. Sir, I'm going to give you an extra 3 minutes as well.
With any luck, I won't need it, Your Honor. May it please court, counsel. My name is Michael Lead. I represent Maytag Oral. What used to be Maytag, it's now owned by Whirlpool. We assert that summary judgment was appropriately granted in this case. The district court properly found that there was no prima facie case. As the court knows from reading the briefs and the record, there's certainly nobody that ever admitted that the basis for Mr. McCoy's termination was that he had filed a workers' compensation claim. Similarly, I don't think that there's any plausible argument that there's circumstantial evidence that Janice McConaughey, the decision maker, did this to punish Mr. McCoy for filing a workers' compensation claim. As the court will recall, the two doctor's notes that Mr. Stone relies on so heavily from Dr. Harriman, when Ms. McConaughey was asked about them, she said, never seen them. She didn't know that those notes existed, even if they had been timely, as Justice Williams pointed out just now. They were certainly in Maytag's files, but the decision maker didn't know that they existed. Even had she known that, all the testimony in the record, both from Mr. Townsend, the Human Resources Director, Ms. McConaughey, who worked in Human Resources, Marie Brasher, who was in charge of the workers' compensation matters, and the union representative, they all believed that regardless, you need something new every 30 days. something that's older and kept you off work for a year would not have satisfied what all the parties understood to be the policy or the rule.
Well, did the collective bargaining agreement state that failure to turn in updated medical information every 30 days would result in termination?
Not in exactly that form, Your Honor. I probably am not quoting it exactly, but what it said is, to be on a valid leave of absence, the company needed an update every 30 days. And I will agree with Mr. Stone that at the very end of that provision of the collective bargaining agreement, there is one sentence that says, this article does not apply to plant injuries. Here again, every party that was asked about that didn't realize that, including the union. Call it ignorance of what the collective bargaining contract said, but the fact of the matter is everybody in a position to worry about that language didn't realize that it said that.
So who should pay the price then for that ignorance? I mean, why should McCoy pay the price for that?
Well, I don't know that he paid the price for that, Your Honor, except in the sense that he didn't do what was within his power to do, which was file a grievance, go see the union.
If nobody was aware of this provision, the provision, there wasn't a requirement that he needed to file every 30 days. That's what you're saying. You're conceding that.
No, I'm not, Your Honor. I'm saying that everybody understood that regardless of whatever that language said, the policy and practice was to require something new from a doctor every 30 days in order for the leave of absence to continue.
Well, that was the practice, but that's not what was in the agreement.
Well, I suppose I would say that that would be up to an arbitrator to determine what the significance of that language was, Your Honor. And we never came to that point.
As far as the 30 days, was it the same whether it be under the insurance policy or whether it was under workers' comp? Did they require 30 days update every under workers' comp as well?
Judge Mannion, as far as I understand what the parties were doing, their actual practice, and what Mr. McCoy was told when he got his ANS benefits is we need something every 30 days. And I don't think it had any bearing necessarily on whether he had filed a comp claim, whether he was thinking about filing a comp claim, or whether he got hurt over the weekend playing softball. If he was going to be on leave of absence and collecting those benefits, policy, practice, and what Mr. McCoy was told was make sure we have something every 30 days.
But those benefits were other than workers' comp, and there was some discussion about avoiding workers' comp, but obviously there were other claims for workers' comp going on. I don't know whether this is in the record or not. It's just out of curiosity, what did they also, when there was a workers' comp claim, require some updates?
Yes, as far as I know, Your Honor. And, in fact, in the record is an affidavit from Marie Brasher, who has been the person vilified in this whole case, saying several things that I think are of significance for this court's decision. One was she outlined in the 15 or so months preceding Mr. McCoy's termination those employees who had violated this 30-day update rule, and of about 17 employees that were caught in that rule, only five, as I remember right, or maybe it's eight, and I can look at the affidavit, had a workers' compensation claim. Everyone else did not, or had an old claim that had been resolved sometime before. Ms. Brasher also pointed out that contrary to the allegation that Maytag challenges every claim or that she had some ability, legal authority, to deny a workers' compensation claim, that out of nearly 800 claims that had been transferred to Gallagher Bassett once it became the third-party administrator, only 14% had been challenged. So, you know, not even 15% were under any challenge. Many were accepted without any question whatever.
Well, is there any dispute that McCoy gave Brasher a hand-delivered note, a medical note, which stated he couldn't return to work for 8 weeks? This would have been September 25th. So, you know, why did he have to do another update?
Yes, Your Honor, and I can direct your attention to three points there that all appear in the record. Brasher said he didn't, that she was unaware of those two doctor's notes from Dr. Harriman. And McCoy, when asked about it, said he thought he'd brought it to her, but he wasn't 100% sure. The one nurse, Ms. LeMay, testified that documents addressed by fax or otherwise to Brasher should have, quote-unquote, gone to Brasher, but she didn't say they did.
So is that a material fact that's in dispute?
I don't think it is, Your Honor, because I don't think that there's any evidence that Ms. Brasher was the decision maker in this case. We've got an argument, and I imagine I'll hear it again on rebuttal, that in an interrogatory answer, Brasher was identified as someone who played a role, but she explained her role both in her deposition, which is in the record, and in her affidavit, which is in the record, that when Janice McConaughey is writing a termination letter to an employee, she checks just to make sure that there might not be somebody that knows something new about the employee. And in this case, she checked both with the nurse in the plant, Ms. LeMay, and with Ms. Brasher, both of whom said, no, there's no 30-day update. So is it arguably a disputed fact? Yes, Your Honor. Is it a material fact? I don't think so. We've got sort of a litany of other arguments that are asserted to be a mosaic of facts that show that this is a retaliatory discharge. We've, I think, in the brief addressed the argument that Maytag is concerned about the cost of workers' compensation. The supervisor testified that they have periodic meetings where they think about all costs. That's not at all remarkable. The union steward said all my plants that I represent are always worried about costs, whether that be materials, workers' compensation, whatever. That's how business makes money. You try to sell for a good price and reduce your cost. The argument about their being pressured to deny claims, I think I've already addressed that. Rather than an assertion by Nina Thompson, the wife of an employee, we've given you numbers, the nearly 800 claims of which only 14% were denied by Maytag. The other thing that I had not even noticed, and maybe the court was a little sharper than I was on this, is Ms. Thompson's affidavit takes into account alleged statements by Marie Brasher after Mr. McCoy's already gone, so I don't know how that necessarily shows what may have happened in 2003. We've got conclusory language that employees with workers' compensation are maltreated or treated badly. I don't know what that means. These witnesses were never asked what it means. If it simply means that Maytag does not automatically roll over, there's nothing wrong with that. As the district court pointed out in an earlier case, Seddon, which came up here as well, it's like a defendant choosing not to admit all the allegations of a complaint and putting the plaintiff to his proofs. The sickness and accident issue, I think, is an attempt to get the court misdirected. As the judge pointed out, that's more of an issue between Maytag and its insurer, and we don't even know whether there was any obligation to reimburse for workers' compensation benefits ultimately honored, so I don't think that proves anything. We've talked about the off-work slips. We've talked about the misaddressed letter. I think the only logical inference is that Mr. McCoy chose not to accept that first letter. But even if he didn't, the district court properly pointed out there was no requirement to give him a warning. Almost 30 days passed after the expiration of his leave, and we still had not had an update, even when he got the termination letter, which said, come see us if you've got anything you'd like us to know. He didn't do it. Maybe he thought he was doing the right thing by talking to his lawyer, but when the lawyer found out nothing was going to happen, I think he should have gone and said, go make a complaint to your union. As the court knows, we've got the second claim here that we violated collective bargaining agreement. I think that's absolutely false. He had the right to file a timely grievance. The evidence in the record is Maytag sometimes would even entertain an untimely grievance, but even the union thought filing one 2 months later was too long. Despite all that, they still went and talked to Maytag, which when they asked Mr. McCoy, why didn't you talk to Janice McConaughey, got the answer, I didn't think it would help. So our assertion is we've done nothing more than apply the rule even-handedly, regardless of whether an individual has workers' compensation claim or not. Maybe they were wrong. Maybe Janice McConaughey should have known what was in the medical file in the plant, but she didn't, and there's no evidence that she did. And I think on the facts before the district court, summary judgment was proper. We thank the court for its attention. We would ask that it be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Mr. Stone, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me address one of the points that Mr. Reed made, which was no one in the plant knew that Article 23 did not apply to plant injuries. Well, that's not true, because Mr. Townsend knew, and Mr. Townsend was the boss of everyone. And, in fact, what Mr. Townsend thought was that what Maytag could do was unilaterally decide if someone was injured in the plant or not. And if Maytag unilaterally decided that they weren't injured in the plant, then they would properly apply the 30-day rule. Well, even if that's lawful, the problem here is that there's no investigation that he wasn't injured in the plant. In other words, Townsend says Brasher did an investigation. She didn't do one. All of the evidence suggests he was injured in the plant. So this business of I was ignorant, I don't think is credible. The other thing is that the district court and Mr. Lead want this court to believe that the woman in charge of Article 23 doesn't know what it says. Now, Article 23 spans two pages. I mean, you could read it in a minute and a half. And the woman in charge says she doesn't know what it says. I don't think that's credible. Judge Williams, I want to address with you, please, that Article 13 and Article 23 are the significant articles in the CBA. Article 13 applies to someone with an occupational injury. And if you file for an occupational injury, which my client did, his absences are excused and he does not have to provide 30-day notice. With regard to the 30-day notice, please look in the record at the warning letter that McConaughey writes saying that he violated the 30-day provision. His last off-work slip, faxed to Marie Brasher, was dated October 3rd. The warning letter says his 30 days expired October 21st. That's only 18 days. I mean, they come up with a justification for terminating him after the fact, and they don't even make the math right. His last off-work slip was only 18 days old, when at that point they say he's in violation, and he never was. And when they sent him the warning letter, they sent it to the wrong address, and they knew they sent it to the wrong address. So, I mean, here you have a situation where my client was fired for not answering a question that they already knew the answer to, for not responding to a letter that they sent to the wrong address. And given all of the facts in this setting, no one can find a convincing mosaic that it's workers' compensation that motivates Maytag to put my guy on a benefit track that he ends up terminated. And that should be unlawful. And we ask that this court reverse. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.